Blog Talk Radio.
We're getting ready to start a five-part series, Democratic and Hopeless in Georgia, with a question mark. Now, I want to make sure I emphasize that question mark because I'm yet to claim that we're Democratic and Hopeless in Georgia. But the question is being asked because we've all heard over the last couple of years the phrase, we're going to turn Georgia blue. And after last year's crushing defeats in 2014, we seem no closer to victory than we were 5 years ago. We've heard rousing speeches to the future glory of the Democratic Party here in Georgia, but very little evidence of truly winning the future, which is the DPG's motto. Rural democracy, very little support from Democratic leadership. Metro deals are mired in scandal. We're going to probe the minds of Democratic operatives and activists in this five-part series, again titled Democratic and Hopeless in Georgia, question mark. So let's go ahead and I'm going to hit this because, Stacey, you as an activist out there in the street, tell us what you hear from my people in the street when it comes to the Democratic part of Georgia.
Pretty much the activists, they don't trust the Democrats. There's always been a separation between the activist community and the Democratic Party, I think to the detriment of both. But because of what they see, you know, a really good example is the fast-track TPP vote. You know, one day, you know, you see Democrats, oh, we're on your team, and then the next minute, you know, you turn around and they're throwing you under the bus. There's a lack of trust. It seems to be some of that trust is also in that you got to say what you mean and mean what you say so that you're never misunderstood. And sometimes Democrats tend to hold a line or they shift as far as the wind blows. So, you know, and for an activist, you're advocating on a specific position and you need somebody to hold the line. Democrats, they're going to go where the votes go. So, you know, pretty much they don't trust them as far as they can spit. And it's,
I've been watching, you know, the tweets, the blogosphere, particularly this weekend as the GOP was holding their convention over in Athens. One of the things that I was watching really, really closely, and I posted on Facebook and on Twitter about this, is that the GOP is actually making a play for the Democratic base. I mean, they're making a play for it. They actually elected an openly gay man to be the treasurer of the GOP this weekend.
Yeah.
That right there says volumes. There are numbers of African Americans that are attempting to help them co-opt what normally has been Democratic-based issues and turning them in such a way that making some African Americans go, hey, they know what they're talking about, and yet we're not hearing from Democrats as a whole. Now, you might have a faction here, a faction there that are talking on certain issues. I mean, you even got the Republicans making a play on the environment here in Georgia. It's crazy. And we yet to hear a message that is Georgia-centered, Georgia-based, to go out to people and say, hey, the Democrats are in the game. And I'm going to use one example, particularly from the environmental standpoint. There are two pipelines that are being built. And we all here, Democrats, we know we hate the XL pipeline. Progressives, we hate it. We know it's bad for the environment. It brings no jobs. There's no economic benefit or environmental benefit for America. But we have two pipelines similar to the XL pipeline attempting to be built here in Georgia. One called the Sabal, and the other one is the Palmetto. And I talked about this before. And you have two of the caucuses of the DPG, well, I wouldn't say caucuses, the advocacy groups. You got Greening Georgia, and you got the Georgia Democratic Rural Council, who have both teamed up to fight these pipelines. We've yet to get a message, as much as we both groups have talked about this, to the leadership. And they know what we're doing. We've yet to get an official message from the top about what our position is. But we've heard from Nathan Deal. We've heard from several of the Republican representatives from the legislature on this issue, and they actually side with us. We're actually on the same side of this issue. But now you got the governor speaking out about it, and these folks in these rural communities are hearing the governor talk about this. The folks in Savannah are hearing the governor talk about this. The folks in Albany are hearing the governor talk about this, but they have yet to hear a word from Atlanta. Most folks in Atlanta don't even know this is going on.
Yeah, and that is
national issues.
Right, and that's a big problem. You know the Tip O'Neill quote, all politics is local. And lots of times we get so involved in the kabuki theater that's going on in the national. And what we don't understand, most of the power and the problems that we face, they often arise and or are situated from the local or state level. This whole pipeline, the two pipeline issues, it's stunning to hear how quiet it is. And for, here's the thing. When you're building a coalition, it doesn't matter. Yeah, those Republicans who are on, quote-unquote, outside on this one, now, having a conversation with them outside of this issue, there's probably very little you're going to find commonality with. But what people need to understand is how we're going to fight these things and defeat it. All you have to know is, on this issue, are you with me? Now, the reasons why the Republicans are here are for this is because probably the eminent domain aspect of it, and which brings them into it because, and it's not right. It is not right for these companies to come in.
We got a call calling in. Let me chime in.
Okay.
And it's not right. Welcome, caller. Who do we have on the line? We got a call.
Hello, this is Kimberlyn Carter.
Hey, Kimberlyn. How you doing?
Hey, Ms. Carter. I'm doing great. Hello.
Hi, this is Stacy. Good to meet you.
Hi, Stacy. Nice to meet you, too.
So we were talking
about... I'm sure you two
about...
guys have been in the same room together somewhere. I'm sure y'all have.
We probably have, but, it gets to be a blur after a while.
But we were just having a discussion here. We actually were discussing an issue that me and you talked about some. We were talking about the Palmetto and Sabal pipeline and how quiet DPG has been when you now have the governor and several Republican representatives, Canada and jumped on this train, and I don't think anybody north of Macon knows what's going on about this situation. So that's what we were sitting there discussing with how quiet.
Yeah. What that speaks to is three different things. And that's unity and purpose, strategic planning, and and targeted messaging. And so when those three things are not in existence, you don't have the type of communications pipeline that is necessary so that you know that these types of things are going on and you can disrupt or amplify whenever needed on these types of issues. Yeah. That is why I was afraid for this so-called Green Caucus to occur, because I didn't feel like the idea of it was broad enough to really be the type of vehicle that our party needed in terms of being able to truly message and understand all of the issues that were going on across the state. I don't know if the two of you agree, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I'm a somewhat of, you know, go ahead, Stacey.
No, I mean, I have a question because it's kind of hard to believe that the Democrats, with all the activism that's gone on and the messaging is sort of similar to the pipeline, the XL pipeline, and the strategic planning, really, there's really little excuse for the Democrats not to have one by now, because if the activist community, and there's been groups like Spectre Busters and local activists in Lowndes County and elsewhere who have been actively fighting this, and one only needs to do a search on Google to find it. So why are the Democrats having a problem finding these issues when there's activism going on the local level? They seem to be out of touch with that. How can we remedy that?
Well, I'm going to say that. Go ahead, Kimberly.
No, that's why I go back to unity and purpose. I cannot say equivocally and with confidence that I really understand at a state level, not at a national level, but at a state level, what the mission and vision and core beliefs are for the state party. And that's because I don't know, you know, there isn't a framework for us to ever really have time to have those types of meaningful discussions so those community pipelines and those things that we care about are truly underscored. And Stacey, I totally understand what you're saying about, okay, it's on Google, okay, it's here, okay, we've got local interest and what have you. But I still don't see at the state level, at the top, the mission, vision, and core beliefs aligning enough so that all of these things fall into place. You know what I'm saying?
I understand it, but they do have a platform from 2014, correct?
Well, let me say this. I'm on the platform committee, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have been having all types of, you know, back and forth and emails and canceled meetings. And if you can remember at the last state convention, the, you know, of course it was tabled to discuss the platform. So that is not active right now.
Mm.
So there is no, once again, there's no document, there's no unity of purpose, there's no strategic planning and no targeted messaging occurring at any of these levels so that these things, you know, can be embraced.
Well, let me jump
it's
in
just not happening.
Here because I'm gonna read something for y'all from an email that I received. And this was from Alex Johnson. He was one of the guys who was running for chair of the Georgia GOP. Okay. And they were talking about what their mission was. He didn't win, of course. You know, Pageant is still the chair, but they are concentrating. Their whole thing is they having similar issues that we're having. But the problem is that even though they're having the issues, they are still putting, like Kimberly said, they're putting it on paper. They having issues on execution, not on what the purpose is, what the strategic goal. They're having the issues with tactics, and they are arguing very heavily about the tactical side of it. Now we don't even have we're being tactical on an ad hoc type of basis. I mean, you got a group over here fighting this. A group over here fighting this. But let me read you what he said, and this is one of the things that get to me. And they were talking about volunteer and county involvement. And I quote, "While money is important, your involvement and hard work is the most important aspect for our party to survive and thrive into the future. You determine what resolutions are passed. Stating the party's opinion on various issues, you create the party platform. You determine whether or not you want to create a state platform. You knock on doors. You volunteer for candidates. And candidates get elected. You decide what we stand for." Now, that in itself speaks volumes, because we've not heard that statement from our side. Always told where we're going to stand. We're always told which direction we're going to go. We're always told which candidates we're going to support. And we're supposed to be the Democratic Party, okay? The Democratic Party with the big D is not understanding the little d democratic principles of being in a representative democracy. And you got people being turned off by it. It's not just on the left, but we're not going to get any support on the right, because the one thing I can tell you, the GOP members know, if they go into a meeting and raise hell, something's going to happen. If a Democrat go into a meeting and raise hell, you're crazy, you're getting kicked out, and nobody's going to talk to you anymore. So these type of things we got to really start thinking about, because one of the issues that, and I'm going to segue a little bit now, when it talks about the things that we support and decide not to support, that was a bill that passed through the General Assembly, and Stacey, me and you done talked about this. I know me and you, Kimberly, done talked about this. HB 566, and HB 566 is going to be my pain in the ass to the Democratic Party until somebody finally addresses it. Okay, because this was a piece of stupidity on paper. Because we took 9 districts and redrawed them, and this is the thing, when you talk to the average person who thinks they're politically aware in the state of Georgia, they only thought we changed the lines every 10 years. I know I was one of these people that thought we only changed the lines every 10 years. Come to find out, under Georgia law, we can change it when we feel like it, as long as we're not adding or taking away districts.
Absolutely.
But the thing was, they went around and asked every legislator in the assembly, particularly in the House. I don't know what happened, because this was a House bill. Did they like the way that district was drawn? Obviously, only 9 districts were affected, so that means, maybe 5 House representatives didn't like it, because the 9 total would have been, I think, for what I've, you know, you, we get there some numbers in there. But what we're getting to is the fact that, go ahead.
Oh, no, no, I just wanted to add that one of the things that I have enjoyed in my friendship with you, Scout, is how you specialize in this arena of really knowing and understanding legislation and how these things move throughout these different entities. And so if I could add one more to my to my statement about unity of purpose, strategic planning, and targeted messaging, and that is specialization, that we really have lost the ability to embrace and engage specialists in certain areas. I can't remember, but on one of the House of Cards episodes, if you can remember, Underwood was interviewing these different guys, and I can't remember what the job was for. And so some of them were coming in with all these glowing resumes and all this flowery talk. And then it was the one guy who was like, look, I can't do this. I don't have some degree from Harvard, but what I am is a specialist in parliamentary procedure. And remember, he was like, oh, you're our guy, because he could – because what he was able to do is he specialized in understanding Robert's Rules of Order and all these procedures and these things that nobody really cares about, but those are the things that help you to get an edge on the opposition. And so what has happened to us in even when we talk about from a legislative viewpoint, from a field viewpoint, is that we have missed these opportunities to really engage specialists because we're too busy trying to engage our friends. We want to keep our clique safe and clear. So we keep giving jobs to our friends who truly don't specialize in anything that helps us to move the needle forward to win, to put more D's in the column, right? So,
right.
So I just wanted to just commend you again, Scout, on having that specialization. And how do and, you know and how and I'm glad that you are going to be a pain in their butt about it, because maybe someone will wake up and say, this guy specializes in this and we need to make sure that he's at the table, not when the session is going on, but now is when the R's are paying folks to be creating legislation, to be looking at things, to be reading between the lines and all this kind of stuff, not when the session is in. When the session is in, it's already over. All the plays have already been made. All the session is one big stage play. That's all that is. It's not where the real work goes on.
Right, exactly. All the session is photo ops.
Now, question. I have a question for both of you. Who and for, and this will help listeners who are listening to the show, in terms of the structure of the Democratic Party, who would be responsible in compiling and creating the strategic planning and the messaging and all of this? Because I don't think the ordinary citizen knows exactly how the Democratic Party is structured and operated. So maybe both of you can explain it, because I kind of know a little bit of it, but I think some people listening don't really understand. So in terms of the problems of having, this lack of structure and this lack of vision, who is responsible for that?
Right now, I know that we have in our bylaws provisions for a strategic planning committee. And I know that we have, in our bylaws, we have provisions for a platform committee. And we have a provision in our bylaws for a communications committee. We have provisions in our bylaws for committees for these decisions to be made. However, and I can state this from experience, because in the last administration, I was chair for maybe the last 2 years of the communications committee. And there were things going on messaging-wise, how we communicated, that no one ever spoke to not one member of that committee on what was going to happen. And there were points in time I know that we did. There was a point in time that did happen. Up until the point that Eric Gray left, I was in the dark. Because he would at least say, hey, pass this along to a couple of people in the committee and see what they think about this. This is something we want to send out. Like, for instance, we're going to talk, when you talk about a particular piece of communication, that little flyer they sent, that mailer they sent out, Ferguson mailer, Nobody in the Democratic Party who was an operative or an activist thought that was a smart man. But somebody, some consultant somewhere who probably wasn't even really familiar with Georgia, pitched that shit and sold it. And it, excuse my language, it's Sunday, but I'm going to be real with it because this is downsized and dirty. But they fucked up. Okay? And if they had to talk to somebody who was closer to the people in the street, we could have told them, nah, I want to set that out now. Same thing with the platform committee. We the Democrats all the time, we don't need to talk to Republicans. We just need to turn out more Democrats. Well, let me explain something to you. Most Democrats don't even know they're Democrats yet because we not even reached out to them, so who are you talking to? You need to talk to voters, period. Everybody's open game unless they run around with an elephant on the back of their car. And I tell you what, if I get close enough to take a shot at that elephant, I'm going to take a shot at it and I'm going to try to get you off of it. Because they're going to do it to us. We have no sense of what this game is truly about. We're so used to being in power. You know.
But it's been a minute.
Because which part it is wrong. But we're so used to being in power that we don't know how to. It's like a guy who all the girls like. He really don't know how to be. He don't have to be romantic. He don't have to rule nobody because everybody runs to him. We like that guy that don't know how to talk to the girls. Because we just pretty. I'm just pretty Ricky. Everybody gonna love me. But see, pretty Ricky gonna get old sooner or later. Start graying, getting a little fat. He's gonna need some game to keep it up. And that's where the Democratic Party are right now. We pretty Ricky done got old, middle aged, and ain't got no game.
Okay, so
Stacey, to also piggyback on that, the other thing that I wanted to reemphasize is that we have two sides of the coin when we look at the overall structure of state parties. We have one side that's volunteer and it's an elector and those are elected positions. So our chair, vice chair, secretary, vice chair of county chairs, vice chair of candidate recruitment, and treasurer, all of those positions are elected, they are volunteered, there's no monies, no stipends, or anything that those people receive. On the other side of the coin, we do have people who are serving in fully paid positions of benefits and things of that nature. There's an executive director, there's a deputy director, a political director, a director of voter engagement, all of these, a communications director, all of these titles. And so those folks who are being paid, right, to work in those functions have a huge responsibility on the side of the things that I'm talking about. When I talk about unity of purpose, that, of course, is the chair. The chair is that guiding force behind making sure that everyone understands the unity of purpose. When we talk about the strategic plan, the executive director, the ED, is heavily responsible for crafting and delivering either a template, securing an outside firm, or working with the committee that the bylaws permit on the strategic plan that, of course, would be presented to the state committee and the executive committee as a full body to be voted on, approved, what have you, and all this kind of thing. And then when we talk about targeted messaging, that's a little bit more specialized. So, of course, the communications director may decide to hire a firm, go with some political operatives who are here in the state. Definitely the party should be paying and doing polling. That's how the GOP in the state of Georgia is beating the crap out of us, and that they have a better data warehouse where they are consistently polling their base and testing the water. And then, of course, last but not least, when it comes to these specialists, and specializations. I do believe that the paid side of the party, as well as the executive board itself, the paid side, the unpaid side, and the executive board itself should be looking at how do we build a directory of political operatives as well as specialists in certain fields, and doing so with the folks who are in leadership on our legislative side. So that's sort of how, to be frankly honest with you, that's the boilerplate way that it's done. You know, that's not even the folks who are exceeding, you know, that's just the baseline for how it gets done. So where my concern lies, and what terrifies me, is that we still, as a party, as a partisan party, we still haven't reached the baseline. And that is just what is a major, major concern for me.
You're exactly right.
And until we get to the baseline, I'm going to tell you right now, the Clinton campaign, the only thing they have in here is one guy, and all he's doing is looking for volunteers, okay? Martin O'Malley's folk, they've been here a couple of times. They weren't thrilled. Bernie Sanders, he already knows where his pockets of money are in Atlanta, or in Georgia, if he ever comes to the state, other than to look at it on a map, okay? So,
right, exactly.
You know, because until you get to the baseline and people really believe that you have a true mechanism in place, they're not going to put any money in.
I'm going to tell you one of the first things you can do right now to show them that we're not on the baseline. If you go, and I'm going to make sure I do this so I'm verifying myself when I do this, and I'm looking it up, make sure nobody hadn't changed it since last night when I looked at it. But if you go to the Democratic Party of Georgia's website, okay, and you go and click on the tab that says Our Party, and you go to where it says State Committee, there used to be, and for the last 5 years that I've been involved with the Democratic Party of Georgia, I can go to this page, and I can find everybody I needed to find. I can find the chair, the congressional district, all the state committee members, and how to contact them. We had our state party elections on January the 31st. Now, I'm not trying to bash the Democratic Party. I love the Democratic Party. I'm telling you this, Democratic Party of Georgia, because I want you to get your shit together. Because there's a lot of us out here on the ground who are busting sweat and tears, working jobs, two and three jobs. You're still trying to carry the battle. But we need y'all to get your shit together, because we had, on January 31st, had our elections. All the county parties were supposed to have all this stuff settled by the end of February. It is now May 17th, and we still don't know who the state committee is. I promise you that the Republican, after they all leave Athens, they're going to know where every last one of their position is. We can't win a war without an army, and if the army don't know who the generals, the sergeants, and the privates are, we can't put them in the field.
But
that is the first line of base. If I can't contact anybody, I cannot organize them.
And, you know, for me as a, you know, a Democratic voter all of my life, I don't make a claim to be a Democrat. I'm not part of any committee or involved in any on the party level, but I am a voter and a supporter. And it's very disheartening for me to hear that, and also from an activist side, because the activist side and the political side, it's a symbiotic relationship that we share. And so the difficulties of the, you know, and the frustration that activists have, it is held up in the fate of the Democratic Party. So what I'm hearing is that there is a lack of guidance and a lack of direction, and that the troops are waiting for a general. But then earlier I hear the message coming out that, well, you know, the statement that you read by Mr. Johnson, that basically you determine it. So it seems like there is like the volunteers, you know, the elected volunteer corps, who they're pretty much lost because they don't have the training or particularly any idea where to go. And then you have an executive committee who's waiting to take their lead, or I can't even explain to them. I can't even explain why they're in such a holding pattern, and being that the Democrats have been, what, about 15 years out of power in Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
I find it very hard to believe that in 15 years, no one, I could probably bang out a strategic plan for them and give me a week. You know, with everything, there's something going on that we don't know about, because I got to tell you guys, this does not sound right to the ordinary citizen to hear. 15 years out, there's no strategic planning, there's no unity, and then unity of whom? Unity within the party, unity with the Democratic community, you know, what is it that they're waiting for? Who's holding up the progress, and why? You know, I think we need, we're doing everyone a disservice. Just let us know why. If you're about the money, let us know you're about the money. And what's really funny, if you want the money to flow, get the people fired up. None of this is going to happen until you have, the money doesn't start flowing in until they see the people fired up. We saw this the last election cycle. You know, the big thing was voter rights. We had money floating down here. It was just flowing in. Everybody was loving it. And this kind of goes back to HB 566 that Scout and I were talking about, the redistricting. You know, to see all of these groups that came together, the Pro-Georgia Coalition, full disclosure, I was a part of that coalition working with Georgia Wand in the WeCount program. There were plenty of groups who came out, and we were very vocal when there was other legislation that threatened to take away voting rights. HB 66 got passed. HB 66 sat on Governor Deal's desk and was not signed into law until the last day. And there was, you know, outside of Vincent Ford, former candidate Renita Hamilton, and God bless the Board of Election Director in Gwinnett County, who stepped forward and said this was wrong. We heard virtually nothing from Democrats on this, and this makes it very difficult for not only voters, but for those in the activist community to support. And then we're told to vote blue. Why?
Let me say this as well, Stacey. This year was my first year registering as a lobbyist. This is my first year actually taking my advocacy and my activism to the legislative level. Okay, and understand this. I had to find my way to express my activism and to advocate. There, on our side of the fence, there was not one number to call. There wasn't one discussion group or web page or anywhere that a person who is as strong an advocate as I am, who now has a badge on and can really get in the mix, there was nowhere for me to go for that either. Okay.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, so when we talk about how power can see nothing without a demand, thank you, Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if our activists, okay, are not organized, if they're all siloed, then it still helps this other problem to grow bigger. Do you see what I'm saying?
I understand. And Vincent
So it's very much a two-way street, okay?
But somebody's got to make the first move.
No, but let me say this. A good friend of mine, I went up to, I did a roots camp up with New Organizing Institute. Another friend of mine, Don Shanae Collins, I don't know if you guys have heard of Don. Don does one in L.A. that is simply to create and warehouse all of the activists and the progressives and the people who actually have passion and care about all of the issues that matter to our humanity being strengthened. They get together every year, and they strategize and they organize and they make sure that they leave there not only with a document but a directory and also a place where you can go when you want to go raise some hell. This is where you can go on this day and time to go raise hell about obese children, okay? And so I'm just simply saying I don't see that even in the state of Georgia on our activism side. And so if our activism side isn't organized and speaking truth to our internal powers, not necessarily just our external powers, that also makes it very easy for a party that is supposed to be holding up, you know, got the tent and the rainbow banner, all that kind of stuff. It makes it even easier for them to escape their responsibility in that process.
I'm gonna pick up on that end what you're talking about, because me and you, Stacey, we've also had that same problem with the activist community. Well, we got mm-hmm. certain groups that they got money flowing in, they got staffs,
mm-hmm.
and they doing a crappy job.
I'll be the first to tell you that.
They got cooperate with one another.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
every one of our activists, organizations in Georgia, and please forgive me for using this analogy, but every one of our activist organizations in Georgia ought to be a mini tea party to IDPG. We ought to be calling them, showing up, raising hell.
They won't even talk to them. That's the whole point right there. Nobody would even talk to the DPG.
Right.
No.
The DPG treats the activist community. We're seeing the activist community has been characterized as the far left. So for some of their issues, they are found to be too controversial for the centrist core of the party. So the activist community is kind of being repelled by the DPG. That's just my way of seeing it, but
it would still force them, though. Even being repelled, though, it would still force them to say, well, we at least need to get in a room and write down that we ain't going to support that. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
That pressure still would cause them to be against the wall.
It would cause the party to be reactive.
That if you had a tea party, the Republican side, or the Liberty faction, whatever faction it is in the GOP, they do not allow the GOP to meet without their people being in the room, raising saying some what.
Right.
They don't allow it. And
right.
I've been to my fair share of activist meetings, and I've always let everybody know, hey, I am a member of the state committee. I am a member of the DPG. I want to work with you on some issues. And the moment I tell them I'm with the DPG, it's like, now if I walk in the room and tell them I'm with PDA, they might want to talk to me. If I go in there and tell them that I'm a member of any other progressive group, I'm fine. We can talk. But the moment I let them know I'm from the Democratic Party of Georgia, it's like, okay, you skeptical. What you here for?
Right.
And
then
money
and
are you trying to get some money out of it?
Right.
What you want?
Right. And you're
that goes back
right.
to the lack
and
of
one,
trust.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lack of trust
think,
because they've been historically screwed over by the Democratic Party. We only get love from the party during election cycles when they want the vote. After the election's over, they act like, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and they got to get home and they left the money on the table. And half the
yeah.
time the activist
yeah.
community is left short. So you can
right.
kind of understand why there is some apprehension from the activist
right.
community because, mm-hmm. I mean, we just had that protest that was a really good event where activists from Atlanta and Athens got together and was at the GOP convention in Athens. Now, outside of Vincent Ford, Nan Ort, and probably maybe 3 or 4 other Democrats, no one is, and they were there to for Medicaid expansion. There was no one there to support them. There was no one there walking with them. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they have these events, and that's an activist's lifeblood. That's how they have to. That's how they get their funding. That's their showtime doing these events.
Mm-hmm.
When we don't see the Democrats by their side or at least standing with them, you do see it with certain issues, raising the minimum wage, but on environmental issues, on social justice issues, you know, Black Lives Matter, it has been relatively quiet. So it's quite difficult for the activist community. They don't know which side you're on. They know which side you're on during the elections, but they don't know which side you're on after the election's over.
Right, but I think that one of the assumptions that we make is that we think that the GOP has a love affair with the Tea Party, the Libertarians, but they don't. I mean,
they don't. They fight just like we fight.
The old guard of the GOP is their status quo, and they're trying to maintain that. That's why people like Sachs and Chambliss are like, I'm out of here. I can't get any more top line golf dates. I can't get any more stock tips because I got a side of the party that feels like we all ought to wear the same suit every year. You know, I'm just saying, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
so I'm saying that. The Tea Party and the Liberal and all these folks, they continue to disrupt the GOP and amplify what is important to them. So, and what I'm saying is, and I'm saying that until our activist organizations begin to do that under our house, it is still going to be very much siloed and separate and all of that. I mean, there are some things that are so extreme within the Tea Party policy bag that, I mean, it is just no possible way the traditional GOP is ever going to side with them. But it doesn't stop them from showing up, disrupting, amplifying, and making the point that we don't care what you say, this is still our point. And that's what I'm saying. And as much as I love the progressive Dems and the progressive Dems of America, as far as I'm concerned, they're playing too much of we're trying to be the separate folks and come over here rather than truly disrupting what's going on in the DNC and truly and truly amplifying it as quickly as I would like. But they are disrupting it because, as you can see, the messaging is beginning to shift. So there's disruption going on. It's going on in some smaller spaces that's amplifying it to some larger spaces, and I think that is a good thing. And I'm just saying that I wish that the Georgia side of activism would do that more. And I think I think we may have, you know, drifted off subject a little bit, but I just wanted to make that point. About both sides of the house.
Okay. So you're saying that the activists need to engage more with the political party?
I'm saying that they need to do what the Tea Party folks do. They need to show up and show out.
Well, the activists do show up. It's the people who are not showing up. I've done events in Georgia for a few years, and I've watched quite a few really good activists get burnt out or, you know, we got to eat. So because a lot of people who do activism or community organizing work, they're not paid for what they do. They're volunteers just like many on the CPG level. And I've watched quite a bit of people who I don't think it's a problem with the activist community. You've got a lot of great people out there, a lot of very smart, passionate, determined people who have been working quite hard. But the problem, I think, is endemic to Georgia. Getting people to come out in this state, and I can't explain it. We're an anomaly, but it is very difficult to organize here unless in order to get the people out, we have to go to the place where the centrist core of the Democratic Party does not want to go. So that sets up a dynamic that's going to keep both sides separate, and it's not doing either side justice. But I think the biggest problem is not so much with the activist community. I've seen some great coalitions form together on immigration, on the most promising one is the one for raising the minimum wage, 15 in the union. But it's really hard. I mean, even
all
on
right,
social
hey,
justice issues.
We got a caller in. Let me get caller on him.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello, caller. Who do we got?
Hello. My name is Rhoda Ross Williams. Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Ro.
Hey, Stacy, is this you?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Stacy. I apologize.
She's a Facebook connection
of mine. Yes, and I saw this, and I was like, let me call in because I have something I want to say.
Okay, get it off your chest, girl.
Well, one thing that I do want to say about Georgia Democratic Party that I have noticed just in my time in the deeper south from the area that I come from to even coming up Northway, Georgia, there's a total disconnection on understanding the true issue of the people, and I'm talking about normal people, the voting party, the constituents that the votes that they need are not being heard. Definitely we want to raise the minimum wage, but we also have to address the part that half of the people that are constituents can't even find a job. Half of the people who are constituents can't even get their children to the proper school. Half of the people who are constituents have nothing working in their favor other than a limited handout based on social welfare that is used as like a carrot in front of a horse in Georgia to the black voters. That's an insult. I can say that myself as a single mother. The ideology of we're going to give you this, but we dare you to do anything else because if you do, you're going to struggle. So with me being in the middle of the two, of course, I struggle because I refuse to be set on a fence to always reach for a handout that's never going to get me where I want to go. And if I sit there complacently, I'll never get there. So I feel like the Democratic Party needs to realign its views, understand that people don't want handouts just for vote. We want to be heard and we want to be respected. We want to be given opportunity as well. And that's the thing that I'm noticing with the Democratic Party in Georgia. It's like a pat on the head and give us a vote, and here go your benefits. We don't want free handouts. We want to be respected.
Let me, Ms. Williams, let me ask, what county are you from?
Well, I'm from Lowndes County, but I recently moved to Columbia County. Now, I have not really gotten into the dirt of things with Columbia County as I've adjusted with this fresh move up this way because of some things with my daughter from where I came from in Lowndes County. That's another story within itself. That'll be featured in the Chronicle.
Yeah.
However,
I got you now because. I'm feeling you because I was feeling you were talking about the disconnect because, you know, I'm the chairman of the Georgia Rural, the Georgia Democratic Rural Council. And I've been trying to get all of our folk together because the simple fact is, like you said, there's a disconnect between the voter. You know, there's this term we use in Atlanta called ITP and OTP. ITP is inside of the perimeter, and OTP is everything outside of the perimeter. The majority of the state sits outside of 285.
Exactly.
And that's what you get outside of 285. Nobody kind of knows what we think, how we think, what we think.
No.
I mean, even the folks who literally slap up on every 285, it's another world.
Yeah.
And,
it is
you
totally.
Know, we got the KJ case down there from down in Lowndes County. We had the Quitman 12-1. You have all of those different issues that took place in South Georgia that we never, ever heard the Democratic Party take a stand on, particularly the Quitman plus 12, the Quitman thing. That we never really made a stand on it. We talked at it, but we never really put our hands on that because that was local activists who went to jail for doing what we want everybody around the state doing, which is getting out, making their voters turn out.
But and let me say this. And the horrible message, okay, that we have sent to the world about that is the folks in Quitman were volunteering. The people with the New Georgia Project were being paid. So are you telling me that – are you following my logic here? So it goes back to what your real core beliefs are. So what are our core beliefs about single parenthood, about women, women of color, women of color who have children, women of color who are single children? And so it goes back to – what are your core beliefs? Because when your core beliefs are solid and you have that unity of purpose, what pains a single mother in Sylvester, Georgia, is going to pain a single mother in Decatur, right?
Exactly.
And so when we have that true understanding, we have the core belief that our goals and that everything that we do is aligned to making life better for both of those women as Georgians, then everything we do and say aligns to that.
Yes.
And so, and what I'm saying is you don't have to go to Sylvester, Georgia for a single mom in Sylvester, Georgia to know you're fighting for them is what I'm saying. When your messaging and your core beliefs and your unity of purpose is aligned.
And I think you bring up a good point, Kimberlyn, because, you know, we talk about Metro Atlanta and rural and, you know, the rest of Georgia, because we tend to be Atlanta-centric in this state, and which I think is a really big tactical mistake, but we tend to think of urban and rural as our issues being separate, and they're really not. And you know, as Rove mentioned, the problems, you know, employment, that's just as big. I live in Southwest Atlanta by the airport. Education, employment are very big topics. That impact whether it doesn't matter whether you live down in South Georgia or in South Atlanta or up north. These are the topics, and the case like the Quitman 10, like you said, messaging as far as messaging and connecting those to the core platform, that was an issue made in messaging heaven. Right there, and you pretty much brought out the top lines right there. So why, once again, who's supposed to be doing this? Because, you know, it's like, you know, when you look at the DPG, it's like Oz, okay? Who's behind the curtain that's supposed to be doing this? And maybe you guys, you know, I know you guys are affiliated with the party, and it may be a little difficult for you to say that out loud. But is this something that DeBose Porter is supposed to be doing?
I don't think that it's Dubose's job singularly as the chair. I think it's definitely a combination of the volunteer side, which comprises, you know, some of the people on the executive board, as well as the folk on the paid side. But as the chair, I think he definitely does direct and make recommendations to the paid side as to what their goals and jobs and responsibilities should be. And, of course, all of these people, I'm assuming, also have job descriptions, and that is always, you know, a good guide for checking off and knowing, you know, what folks are supposed to be doing.
And let me be clear, I'm not trying to, you know, I just, for informational purposes, I have nothing against, I'm sure he wants to send the Colombian hit team out for me, but, you know, it's people need to understand how it works and who's responsible for this, not to bash, but in order to fix what is a definite problem. This is for informational purposes. And for Democrats who are listening out there and going, oh, she's at it again, I'm really on your team, and I'm really trying to help y'all out as much as I can. Mm-hmm. But internally, you guys got a lot of stuff to fix. And for activists, you know, you're asking activists to come to you when you're fractured, you're disjointed, and you don't have a vision. Somebody in the DPG has got to get that vision together, or this is not going to work.
Now I'm going to give y'all a perspective on this, because I'm going to reiterate. I'm not here. Mm-hmm. This show, our topic is not to disparage or destroy the DPG. We're not here to do any harm. This is the fact that this came about because people were asking questions. You can go to any major Democratic Facebook group anytime you go to a Democratic function and people are in the corners talking. These are the conversations that they're having, and I felt like it was time. But one of the things I'm sitting here looking at I did a search on my emails, and I'm looking at the last maybe 10 press releases that came from the DPG. Now, each and every last one of these press releases were about something that was dealing with something on the national level. I see one about 5 things you need to know about Ted Cruz. Jared Bush isn't fooling anyone on Latino issues. Chairman Porter on Rand Paul's announcement. You'll see what the next one was. Why on earth are Republicans proud of climate science denial? The first vice chair congratulating Loretta Lynch on confirmation. The one thing that did deal with Georgia was that kind of dealt with us with the announcement of the delegate selection plan, but that still deals with the DNC. And then we had the issue of a statement on marriage equality. We already know where we should stand on these issues, but it's those things, it's the issues that we need to deal with that are here in Georgia that we all know that the Republicans, who are they going to choose for their nominee? We don't let them do that. But what are we doing to motivate our voters to get behind whoever is going to run on the Democratic side, whether it's 2, 3, 1 person, whatever it's going to be? But we need to get our people motivated. And talking about issues that don't have anything to do with Georgia is not going to do that, because one thing I realized from stomping and being all across the state of Georgia and telling people in Georgia really could give a damn about Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee. They can give a damn. Us Georgians, we real funny about that. We'll tell you in a minute. Georgia is all, I stay far and tell you what's on our mind. Georgia is always on our mind.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So we don't care. You know, every time we care about Alabama and Florida when it comes to them on my wall. Okay, we care about South Carolina. The Clemson Tide need to stay where it's at. Georgia needs to beat them every time we play them. That's all we care about. You know, so that's it. To even seem to keep them volunteers within. We don't care about other states when it comes to sports. But our politics is local. If you talk to the counties only care what's going on in their counties. Now, true enough, we get in our issue silos, but if we operate from that perspective, because the Republicans do the same thing, they're going to point out Georgia each and every time. Everywhere they're going to do everything they do, they're going to connect it to Georgia. Because that's what people care about. So, I, Chairman Porter, you have my sword. But if I'm going to draw it, I need to know who I'm playing. And I need to know where you want me to come at. I'm a loyal Democrat. But because I'm loyal, don't make me a yes man. We need, and that's the one thing we got to get out of our system, because they expect for us to be yes people. Yes, we're going to do what the Democrats, yes. But to win the future, we got to have a constructive conversation. And then we got to come up with an action plan. Then we have to execute that plan. And it has to be, this thing needs to be done before the leaders start turning. Because if we get past the 4th of July and we don't have something to do, we don't got a plan, we might as well just count Georgia out, because Georgia will not be in play. Georgia shouldn't be in play, because we won't be ready. Money will be coming down here and going down the drain. Because we won't be ready.
Well, I think the last, 2014, that was kind of a tipping point for us. And I'm hoping that the lessons that were that came up are actually digested and learned. You cannot win, and I will say this till I die. You cannot win any race where your candidate divides the base. If a candidate divides the base, they will not win. If the candidate is too moderate, they will not win. Ask Mitt Romney. They all have to go, and it's a fine line. And what you say on the campaign trail, and this is a dynamic that we're seeing, with the advent of technology and people can get access to information rather quickly. What you say on the campaign trail is very different of what you can actually do in office. And I think there's been a lot of overpromising and underdelivering in that respect. And the electorate has gotten wise, and they've gotten a little bit jaded of it. So, right now, if you're going to run as a populist, You're gonna have to deliver on some of that when you get in there, or it's going to hurt your party in the following election cycle. So I'm really, really hoping
the Republicans taking place now. There's a small bit of a revolt going on because they promised, cutting taxes, and this is a Georgia-centric conversation. And now you got the Republicans are screaming at their convention that, shoot, the GOP screwed us. Because all we got out of them was tax increases. And they even used one of our own, flyers that Lita Abrams put out to push the point that everything that the Democrats seen as a success, one, we couldn't have pushed it through by ourselves because we don't have a majority. So that meant the Republicans had to be on board with it, and everything was a tax increase. So for them, from their perspective, that's what it was. And they are looking at that and saying, hey, you betrayed us. And then we looking at some of our issues and going, hey, yeah, you got us this, but that ain't really what we wanted. What we wanted was you to do something about our educational system. What we wanted you to do was to expand Medicaid. And we know going back to HB 566, we know we need a majority. We as Democrats need to stop trying to hold the line. It is time to go on the offensive. And as I say this, I'm going to go ahead and segue because we're kind of running over on the show. But I'm going to go ahead and segue. We need to be going on the offensive. It is no longer time to try to hold the, because every seat we got, the Republicans have made a pledge to challenge all of our 60 seats that we have in the House. They are pledging to go out there and put out a grassroots effort because of some of these areas. They say people don't even know what the Republicans stand for because they've been under Democratic rule since 1867. They coming in to reproduce. I got a caller coming in. The last part of the show, we're going to take this caller right quick. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scout, this is Dominic.
Hey,
yay,
Dominic, glad
Dominic
to have you on.
Great, hey. Thank you. I'm happy to be on.
Go ahead.
The one thing I wanted to bring up that I'm very concerned about is after everything that happened in 2014 with the elections and our losses, you know, with the Nunn campaign, I guess with the Carter campaign too, is that a lot of the strategists and specialists that Kimberlyn was talking about earlier that just were not utilized during the election process are starting to look at other options. And so I'm concerned about a brain drain happening with our specialists in Georgia that people are going to just start leaving. And so when you talk about places like Columbus, Columbus, we have a very limited number of political strategists and operatives who have the skills and the willingness to actually engage in these kind of long-term big campaigns that we need people to win. And after the 2014 election cycle, I was reading some Republican blogs and articles and stuff like that, and the chief strategy guy for the Purdue campaign, he said they won. There was two reasons why they beat Democrats in the Senate race. And one, it was because they had better polling, which Kimberlyn mentioned earlier. And two, because they beat us in the field, because they had 17 field offices open, and we barely had any open. And so the issue with that is that if this brain drain does occur, which it's already beginning to occur, I think, we're not even going to have the people in place to do the work that we would want to do if this big change that we're talking about does happen. And so, you know, my concern is that we need to start figuring out a way to start using the people that we do have in place and putting them to work and getting them to do stuff in their communities, because there's work to be done in places like Columbus and Albany and Macon and Savannah and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think it's a twofold thing. One, there's just work that has to be done that needs to be done. And two, by giving people work to do, it keeps them in place, because we don't want to lose all these folks. And I've already talked to several people who have mentioned the July cutoff that you were talking about earlier, Scout, and they've said that if they don't start hearing something by July in terms of work for the upcoming campaigns, they're out of here. I would include myself in that group. So,
as a consultant myself, I actually took on a regular 9-to-5 just because you would think, particularly after all the conversations we had right after the November election with potential candidates and whatnot, we told everybody, hey, we want to have 2016 be productive. We need to go to work as soon as January and February. And people, you know, this comes up to what I was segueing on before you called in, was that in this next show we're going to do, I'm going to do my best. Well, we got some indication that this may be possible to get Ted Terry on this show.
Okay.
So we can talk about candidate recruitment, because this candidate recruitment and candidate and campaign training needs to be talked about and dealt with quickly.
But that's also where the activist community can help, because what you're talking about is nothing more than good old organizing. And there are a lot of progressive and liberal organizations that do that. Kimberlyn, you mentioned the NOI. They've got great online training programs. I've been a big fan of NOI for years. They've got a really good online set of webinars, and there are plenty of groups out there who are willing to train people, whether you're with a political organization or an activist community, to do that. So where, you know, how or when can we do that? Because I'm concerned about the brain drain, too. I'm seeing it on the nonprofit side as well. You know, there are people who you got to eat. And, you know, if the money's not flowing in, the nonprofits are not getting funded, people aren't getting paid, activists are getting tired, they're getting burnt out, they're getting discouraged, they're getting frustrated. And so the brain drain you're talking about, I see not only on the political side, but on the other side, I think people need to be getting ready for July, because in July, that's when we'll have the Democratic convention and we'll know exactly who the nominee is going to be. And that's the time for unity should happen right after, what is it, July 25th, that weekend? The weekend after July 25th, that's when we need that unity to come in and where we need all these people now. So it's... So we've got, what, about a year and a half? I mean, a year, about 14
the July
months.
The July cutoff, me and Dominic are talking about, is July.
I'm talking about the 2015
election.
Because that means
the 2015 elections is a wash. If they haven't done anything by now, it ain't going
to
get done.
Well, see, what needs to happen is that if you're going to seriously consider running in 2016, you cannot wait till January to start trying to raise money, putting together an organization.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You need to start now. Because anything other than that, you're behind the ball. Everybody is serious about running, even on the Republican side, are starting now. They might not be talking a whole bunch. They might not be putting out commercials and this, that, and the other, but they are organized. These people are talking.
Well, can I
fundraisers.
I'll make it quick because I know time is of the essence. First of all, you know, I can't agree with Dominic Perkins more about what he is saying about political operatives and specialists. One thing that I know, because I have a couple of friends who are over on the other side of the force, and trust me, the GOP has a literal mill of specialists and operatives that they are training, raising up, and putting out there. When you look at their campaigns on the four-year or two-year cycle, it is rare that you're going to see the same firm, the same people, the same folks hanging around their candidates. Because they are bringing people in and pushing them up to next levels. A guy that worked even on a mayoral campaign that I know of, then he went to work for Johnny Isaacson's campaign. Then he did a campaign in Virginia. Now he's working at the Capitol as a communications director for a U.S. senator. So you have to. I mean, you can't tell me that we need to be organizing or doing anything until you have your operatives and your specialists in place. Because some of this organizing can be handled via digital organizing that can create a groundswell that then puts some butts in some seats. So I think it's very critical that what Dominic is saying about this burnout that's happening. But once again, going back to what I'm saying, the Georgia Democrats are having a heck of a time trying to convince national strategists and funders that this state is in play for 2016 because the same things that I keep talking about, unity of purpose, having a strategic plan, targeted messaging, and having specialists and operatives, having a diversity of specialists and operatives that you can put on the ground at the snap of a finger who can either build your volunteer base or build a strong enough paid base for you that your campaign doesn't have to go broke to keep your field covered. So that is why we're having this problem with the national strategists and funders. But let me go to something here. Let me just pull out my hashtag. Earlier, Stacey used the hashtag about the Black Lives Matter. When you have, and I know folks getting ready to be mad at me, but I'm going to say it. When you have a person who is a part of our congressional delegation say that nobody wants to be part of a party that's full of black and brown folk, and that we need to go out here and just find us. I guess we're going to go out here to the white folk tree and start picking them off the tree. When you have that type of mindset at the leadership level, what do you think that sends to the rest of your national strategists and funders when you told them that the state was going to get browner and blacker so that you can turn it bluer? Hello? Hello?
Well, I mean.
Now, I am a fluffy girl, so when they said that the fat lady has sung, I'm getting ready to drop my mic.
You did. You dropped the mic. And there is fear of a brown planet. We heard it during the last session. There was some grumblings that there was too much spent on, the black people and poor people. And I think a lot of people don't understand that they really are poor and we're all in the same boat. But an interesting dynamic was the Senate race and the Fab Five that brought up some racial issues. You know, with the Senate race, we heard a lot about we need a woman in Congress. You know, we should elect a woman, which I'm definitely down for.
But Stacey, that's different from what I'm talking about. You're telling the fundraisers, the strategists, and the big wigs at the DNC that you turn in your state browner and blacker so it becomes bluer. But then here on the other side, your leadership is saying that you're too black and brown. So what I'm saying is, once again, that unity of purpose, having that correct messaging.
We're not confused. Leadership is confused.
So who's going to come in here and hire a brilliant young man like Dominic Perkins that I said, hey, this young man is more valuable than being some field rep stuck somewhere knocking on doors in 100-degree weather when he understands the field and the ground, and I need him to be a data director?
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
That's
where we have to go with that. Because in this current campaign plantation mentality, all of our young men of color are only good enough to be field directors, not data directors or digital strategists or campaign managers. See, I'm getting ready to get off this phone call.
The Democratic Party in Georgia.
We got to fight up now.
We need to make sure that we keep this fire not burning. So when next Sunday comes, all y'all call back, get some more folks in, we can talk about this. Because like I said, this is a five-part series. Because by the time I get finished, somebody going to understand how we push this joker forward. By the time we get finished, it will be mid-June. And we will say, if somebody needs to have it in there, get God to understand that if they don't do what we're going to do, come on, man. We're going to have a lot of crying and slow walking, and they're going to be a casket, and it's going to be the Democratic Party of Georgia. And we're going to end up being elected in the House. Republicans are going to end up taking over Atlanta, and we're going to look like we're going to be the laughing stock of all Democrats. If we don't get
there won't be a Democratic Party. We'll be like the Alabama.
And don't think it ain't possible, because you're exactly right. They like to shut off. They have to shut their lights off. So, people, let me make sure I make this disclaimer again, because I got a feeling that a lot of Democrats were listening today. Let me make this disclaimer. I love the Democratic Party of Georgia, okay?
Yes, we do.
I want my leaders to understand that our displeasure and our criticism is not
constructive,
being seditious or treasonous in any form or fashion. We want you to get your shit together. We want to win. I'm tired of talking about it. I want to be about it. I didn't take all the. I don't did a lot of suffering. And Stacey and Kimberlyn both know this. I've done a lot of personal suffering to the Democratic Party of Georgia. We need you to get.
We
I
all
need
have.
To understand that the blood, sweat, and tears that I have been through have been worth something. Because I want to see us win. It ain't about the money for me. It's about my children. It's about the other 14, 15 million Georgians that's in this state to have a government that is responsible to them, that understands their needs. This is not about Democrat or Republican necessarily, but we have to have all the players in the game playing the game for the game to even be worth watching. Tired of getting my ass handed to me every time I go into an election cycle. They let me gonna go to somewhere else, like Dominique said, the brain drain ain't gonna take place. Activists are gonna stop wanting to go out. People are not gonna wanna protest. People aren't gonna wanna do nothing. And they're gonna be like, screw it, it's gonna happen, let it be, let it be. We'll leave Georgia. Republican and Democrat alike. So we got to play our side of the game to keep the balance.
But we do
without the love, the way to get out of hand.
This needs to happen because, you know, they like, you hear the GOP talk about the, you know, states being the lab. Georgia has been the mess lab of the political community for decades. And they have been perfecting their craft here. They have turned it into an art form and are laying the template for other states. You know, and we really, you know, like I said, I'm not a part of the Democratic Committee. I'm not a part of structure, but I am a Democratic voter, and the issues that I advocate and champion for are often supposedly in line with the Democratic platform. But I got to say, after 50-something years on this earth and being a voter for probably close to coming up on 40 of them, Democrats have been the worst boyfriend I ever had. And it's really, really disheartening because right now they're our only hope. But so either they're going to die or there will be a Tea Party. Well, we actually are in a Tea Party style revolt. It just looks a little different from what the Republicans are, and I need for Democrats to understand that there's a riot going on. It's a quiet riot, but there's a riot going on, and we're, you know, things have got to change, and we can no longer sit around and talk about, well, we are waiting for this person to come to this part. Somebody's got to do it, and if somebody's out there listening and feel that they are the ones to do it, step up. Well, don't wait, like, for the torch to be passed to you. Snatch it.
Snatch it
and run with it.
Yeah.
Well, people, we're coming up on the end of our time, and I want to thank everybody that called in. I want to thank everybody that's listening out there. Tune in next Sunday because we're going to continue this conversation. We got to get it together. This is, like I said, is out of love. This is an intervention. So with that being said, this is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith and Stacey Hopkins. I appreciate all my guests today. Hope to hear from all y'all again next Sunday, and we out.
Peace.